Welcome to episode 191, Famous Songs with Misunderstood Meanings, and at my house to do the podcast today. And I feel like it's a Sunday and you really wouldn't be working, but because I have a pool,
I'm here.
And you could, the kids could use the pool.
Yeah.
It worked out wonderfully.
It worked out great, actually.
So you beat them by about 20 minutes.
Yes, because it's becoming a thing now to leave the house at the same time. If I want to be somewhere on time, we've got to separate.
Oh, so you can't get out on time with all four of the kids.
We tried. That was the goal, to all get here at the same time. I'm like, all right, got to go. See you there.
So what if they get here while you're up here? They
don't, I just told them to go straight to the back.
Okay, cool.
Right?
Yeah, to have them go to that back, like, they know which way to go out.
Yeah, I think so.
The two main doors don't unlock.
If not, screw it, man. They'll figure it out.
Yeah, F them. But that's Eddie. And so we were talking about doing this Bobbycast, because we haven't done one. And people like these a lot more than I thought that. Not that I didn't think they would.
It's just that we geek out a lot over music, and I didn't think a lot of people like that.
I think they just like you.
Oh, cool.
Eddie from the Sore Losers podcast, which I encourage you to check out if you like sports or guy talk. Do you guys talk about farts a lot or no?
No.
Good.
No. I mean, sometimes we do.
Yeah.
Sometimes we talk about, like, hooking up more than we should.
Because,
like, past hookups and, like, what girls like, that kind of stuff. And it's just like, we shouldn't talk about all that. Let's just move on. Who hit a home run last night?
Check out the Sore Losers podcast. But we're going to do famous songs with misunderstood meanings.
Trying to think of this.
Well, and this is where it all came from. Because on the show recently, I was talking about this song right here, Wonderful Tonight by Eric Clapton.
Oh.
And people usually think this song is a love song.
Correct. A straight up love song.
Yeah. Because he's like, yes. You look wonderful tonight. People dance their first dance.
Mm-hmm.
They play it in romantic scenes of movies.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, most people feel it's a love song. But what it's really about is waiting for his girlfriend to get ready.
Like, hurry up.
Yeah, like, hey.
Yeah, you look great. Let's go.
And, again, lots of proms.
Yeah. Do you know what cotillion is?
Oh, let me see. Cotillion.
Yeah.
It's got to be a rich person thing. Okay. Cotillion. Is it the white person version of a...
quinceañera.
Quinceañera or a... like a bar mitzvah.
I think that's what
a bar mitzvah
is. I don't know. I mean, I'm a Mexican.
Yeah. I would assume that it's that, right?
Right. What is that? Write a passage where, like, a girl turns into a woman. Is that?
You know how you feel uncomfortable talking about hooking up? Yeah. I don't like talking about girls turning into women.
Right. But I think that's what it was.
Mike, will you look up cotillion?
Because I was a little Hispanic guy in South Texas, and there was a group of white people that had cotillion, and I got asked to cotillion by one of these girls.
What was your age?
We were juniors in high school, so 17.
Okay, so maybe a little older then.
Yeah, and so I remember this song was our first dance, because we got there, and we were hanging out, whatever, and this song came on, and she was like, oh, this is a nice one. I like this one. Let's dance to it. But this always reminds me of that, cotillion. I still don't even know what that is.
The song gets used a lot in proms and weddings, but Eric Clapton wrote Wonderful Tonight in 1976 while waiting for his girlfriend and future wife, Patty, to get ready for a night out. They were going to a Buddy Holly tribute that Paul McCartney put together, and Clapton was in the position that he was used to of waiting while she tried on clothes. We've all been there.
Like many of us.
Do you know the George Harrison story?
No.
So Patty was married to George Harrison back in the day when Eric Clapton...
Clapton's Patty?
Yeah, who he's married to there. She was married to George Harrison from the Beatles when he... wrote Layla, which, depending on which version you know.
I know, is that just Layla?
The later version is.
Dun, dun, dun. Oh, there's the unplugged one too.
That, okay, really that's what big. I'm thinking of.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, so you're thinking of the fast one. Yeah, Layla.
Dun, 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 dun.
But then the slower one on unplugged was Layla. we're almost singing the same thing back, but in our minds we're doing it. Clapton and Harrison remained good friends, but Layla was about her.
Ooh.
And Harrison even played at their wedding in 1979.
Mm. But I thought her name was Patty, not Layla.
Yeah, but you don't always put the girl's real name.
Is that writer's code?
Eric and Patty then divorced in 1988.
Mm.
Patty Boyd recalled that Eric Clapton was sitting around playing his guitar while I was trying on dresses upstairs. I was taking so long, and I was panicking about my hair, my clothes, everything. And I came downstairs expecting him to really berate me. And he said, listen to this. In the time she had taken to get ready, Clapton had written, this song right here.
Turn that up. And I say yes, you look wonderful tonight.
It's just how he says it.
It's because it's slow.
Because if you would have said it in normal, in that.
And if you ask me.
Like Green Day.
Do I look all right?
I said, yes.
Yes, you look wonderful tonight. Let's go.
Exactly.
Yeah, a lot of it's just the tempo of the song. You want another one?
Yes.
These are misunderstood songs that are associated with something completely different. Bruce Springsteen, Born in the USA.
Ooh, this is a big one.
Most people think this song is about being super patriotic.
Yeah, like I was born in the USA. I'm American.
It's actually the opposite.
I'm going to be honest with you. I never really listened to these lyrics.
Me either. All I hear is Born in the USA.
Right.
And also, I believe the album cover, if I'm right, had an American flag wrapped on his hand, like a bandana, or in his back pocket.
Or out of his back pocket.
One of the two. His back pocket? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Hey, what was a cotillion, by the way?
It's like a French thing. So the cotillion is a dance at a debutante ball.
Debutante.
Yeah.
I guess it's the same thing. They do it for their girls that are...
The rite of passage. Creepiest thing you could say about it.
I think that's what they said. I don't know. No, it's not my words.
I'll change it. This song, Born in the USA, is really about casting a critical and mournful eye on America and its involvement in war. Bruce Springsteen's got to be like, what is happening? This song is massive.
Mm-hmm.
Turn it up for 1 second. I wonder what... Will you pull up the lyrics, Mike? Read me the first verse. I'll read you some of this about it here. It's one of the most misinterpreted songs ever. Most people thought it was a patriotic song about American pride, when it actually is shameful on how America treated its Vietnam veterans.
Wow.
Springsteen considered it one of his best songs, but it bothers him that it's so widely misinterpreted. With the rhythm, the enthusiastic chorus, and patriotic album cover, it's easy to think, because you see all that and you hear do-do-do, that it has more to do with American pride than Vietnam shame, is what it says. Let's see the first lyrics here. It's born down in a dead man's town. The first kick I took was when I hit the ground. End up like a dog that's been beat too much till you spend half your life just covering up.
I mean, that verse alone just kind of says it.
But we don't hear anything except born down to born in the USA. Here we go. Here's another lyric. Come back home to the refinery. Hiring man said, son, if it was up to me, went down to see my VA man. He said, son, don't you understand? I had a brother at Khe Sanh fighting off Viet Cong. They're still there. He's all gone. He had a woman he loved in Saigon. I got a picture of him in her arms now. And it goes on. You're right.
Yeah, that's pretty.
That's not a patriotic song.
No, not at all. But the chorus is.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. I wonder whose idea it was to be like, hey, it's 4th of July, guys. Play the greatest American song, Born in the USA.
You can just tell we don't listen to lyrics.
No, we don't.
Not just me and you.
No.
But the collective we of America. Springsteen wrote about the problems that Vietnam veterans encountered when they returned to America. Vietnam was the first war the U.S. didn't win, and while veterans of other wars received a hero's welcome, those who fought in Vietnam were mostly ignored when they returned back home.
What year did that come out? 80s, right?
Yes. Born in the USA.
1984.
This dude who was going to make the movie Born in the USA, but it was too associated with a song. Springsteen helped him out providing the song Light of Day, which became new to the movie. What movie is he talking about? Oh.
Was it Born on 4th of July?
The original title was Vietnam. And he sent Springsteen a script for the movie called Born in the USA about a rock band struggling with life and religion, which gave Bruce the idea for the new title. Oh. Anyway, it just is not what it seems.
This is the epitome of this subject. Like, I mean, no one thought that this song was a protest song.
If you hear thunder, it's because it's thundering outside. We are in a storm. Dolly Parton's I Will Always Love You.
It's not a love song. It's not about a bodyguard.
Well, that's another misconception. People usually think this is a breakup song. Like, I will always love you, even though we're not together anymore.
I see that.
So I guess it's still a love song. But it's really a song about Dolly's mentor and appreciating the time they worked together.
We've heard this story from her.
Mm-hmm. It's not a love song in the conventional sense. So she wrote it for a close friend.
Yes.
Porter
Wagner, there you go.
I believe so. Let me keep reading. In 1967, she was invited by the country star Porter Wagner to co-host his TV show, where they became famous for their duets. In his time, her enormous talent eclipsed that of him, and she basically got bigger and decided to jump off. And so she wrote the song about the time they had together. And I Will Always Love You. Not a love song about kissy kissy, but, yes. But a love song like, hey, thanks.
Because
like,
they weren't romantically involved.
Yeah, like I'll always love you.
And she said she just felt like she had to leave. And he was like, okay, well, good luck. Because he thought that they would just do that forever, them too.
She said leaving Porter Wagner wasn't easy. He thought she was making a big mistake and felt she was being disloyal.
That's it.
Dolly Parton played the song to Wagner the morning after she wrote it as a way of letting him know that her mind was made up and to express how she felt about him. Apparently, it got the message across. She said that he was in tears and called it the prettiest song I ever heard that all went down in 1973 whenever they split. They were together 7 years on that show and just working together. And she wrote the song to say, here's how I feel. I will always love you, but I gotta go. So it is, I guess in a sense, it's a breakup song too.
In a way.
Quote, but I gotta go.
Yeah.
It was the second.
It just wasn't about love.
But again, it's not.
Like romantic love.
Yeah. It's not about romantic love or romantic breakup, but right. It is about love and a breakup.
But we got it wrong, and the bodyguard got it wrong too.
Yeah.
Well, refresh my memory. Why is that song relevant in the movie?
In the bodyguard?
Like they fall in love with each other, right? Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert.
I don't know. I've never seen the bodyguard.
You've never?
No, I just see Kevin Costner like jump out and take a bullet, and then yeah. He carries her off.
So somebody dies, right?
Wait, does he carry her off? How does he take a bullet and then he carries her off? I have no idea how the bodyguard goes. I've never seen the bodyguard.
All right. Well, they messed it up too.
It was the second of 5 consecutive number one country hits that she had established. And by the way, Dolly told us that she had never heard the Whitney Houston version until she was driving on the road in her car.
Correct.
And she was like, she had a radio on. I was like, whoa.
It was like a verbal agreement that she had. She was like, yeah, whatever. And she'd forgotten all about it. That she said, yeah, she can record it. And so she heard the final thing. She's like, it's really good.
Yeah, that's what she said to us. Yeah, she's like, huh. They're really good.
Yeah.
You want to have your mind blown with another one?
Come on.
Closing Time by Semisonic.
It's not about a bar closing and you got to go?
It isn't. It's not even about something closing.
No, you're lying. There's no way. Listen to...
Hey, Mike, will you play this from the very beginning?
He even says, like, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. That's what every bar says.
Yeah. I think they've taken it as their own.
Whatever you're about to say, I'm not going to believe it.
Because the message does fit the bar, but it also fits what I'm about to tell you. Okay. Just listen a bit.
All right.
So this is Semisonic Closing Time. Not about a bar.
Closing.
Or anything closing. Here you go.
You've got to go.
Closing time.
Turn it up.
Open all the doors and let you out into the world.
I hear it, Mike, when I know what it's about.
Closing time.
What are you talking about?
Turn all of the lights on over every boy and every girl.
That's a bar. Lights on.
Closing time. One last call for alcohol.
Come
so
on.
Finish your whiskey or beer.
It literally could be a bar.
Closing
yeah,
time.
It is.
Okay.
You don't have to
Will you put the lyrics
home,
up on the page, Mike?
Yeah.
Stay here.
Take me home.
Okay, check it out.
This is a bar situation.
It is not. It's about childbirth.
What?
Mm-hmm. The singer.
Where's the whiskey and beer come in play to that?
Like, look at the lyrics here again.
All right.
Closing time. Time for you to go out into the world.
Baby. Out of the womb.
Turn on the lights over every boy and every girl.
That's the baby's surgical room.
And then he put a couple lines in here to also make it.
No. See, you can't throw a line in.
You don't have to be so literal with everything.
But, okay, so how is the whiskey and beer go in childbirth?
Like, it doesn't have to be...
Anesthetics.
It doesn't have to be literal. Bars picked it because it was literal.
Man, I mean, because that's what it is. That's so...
The singer said it's about the birth of his daughter when he wrote it. Rather than write a cheesy song that was so blatantly about birth, he hid the song's real meaning. He said the guys wanted a new song to close our sets with, so I thought Closing Time would be a good title. We had spent 7 years of our lives at that point, 4 nights a week entertaining people. That was our life. I started realizing the whole thing was a pun about being born, so I made sure the rest of the thing could ride with that double meaning. But nobody got the joke, and I didn't bother to explain how everybody would get it.
Because it's not an obvious joke.
Yeah, it wasn't supposed to be. It just had to be literal.
Interesting.
Like, time for you to go back to the places you'll be from. The room won't be open till your brothers or sisters come. I hope you found a friend. Every new beginning comes from some other beginnings end. Did she die in childbirth? Or don't take the girl? Is it a crossover? Like when Urkel went to Full House?
Yeah. Stefan? Oh, no.
No, just Urkel.
Yes, yeah. I remember that.
He wrote the lyrics, time for you to go out to the places you will be from to show the song's focus was actually on the miracle of childbirth rather than an ode to kicking late-night barflies to the curb.
Wow.
He admitted that he had babies on his mind partway through writing it. He said, we were expecting our first kid. I had birth on the brain. It was struck what a funny pun it would be being bounced from the womb.
And I guess he wrote it by himself.
Want Dan Wilson.
Dan
made
Wilson.
So much money.
Wow. I mean, I'm not 100% believing the story.
That's him. The only writer is telling
you. I believe you.
That.
I feel like he's messing with us. I feel like it's one of those things where, like, watch this. I'm going to go into this interview. Watch this. I'm going to get him real good.
Whatever, dude. Don't be a hater because you never caught it. But now every time you hear it, you'll know.
Yeah, I'm going to be thinking of a baby.
I mean, what's he going to do? Put lyrics in about stirrups?
Yeah.
You can't be at.
Let's go Lightning Crashes on that one.
And again, not so much about a baby being born.
He says placenta falls to the
exactly.
floor.
Exactly. You can't. It's like a rebirth of life
oh.
in general
oh.
in many ways.
Maybe I'm just not that deep.
Yeah. Every Breath You Take by The Police.
It's a love song. It's a stalker song.
It is a stalker song. Yeah.
Dang it, that just clicked.
People usually think the song's about being madly in love with someone. But it's really about a guy stalking a girl.
Come on. You can't do that.
Again, a super misinterpreted song. An obsessive stalker that sounds like a love song. Well, the obsessive person feels like they're in love. And to them, it's just love, right?
Yeah.
You've talked to people.
No, I'm not.
Some people use it as their wedding song. I'll say this too. In this example, in the other examples, a song is, the message is really what you make it. Right?
Sure.
If you wanted to use this as your wedding song because you have a different meaning, that's totally
that's
okay.
Music.
Yes.
The beauty of it.
Literature,
yeah.
Music. Like, you can use it in the way that it affected you.
Correct.
So that be, I'm not going to kind of bag on anybody for using it as a wedding song. Maybe they just Google it. Maybe it's like before Google. It is before Google.
It is way before Google.
If you do it now, that's on you. Like, yeah. All the information's out there.
And we're telling you right
yeah,
now.
Some people use it as, again, their wedding song or first dance song. The Police frontman Sting wrote it after separating from his first wife, Frances.
Ooh.
In 1983, he said, it's a nasty song, really rather evil. It's about jealousy and surveillance and ownership.
Dang.
Regarding the common misinterpretation of the song, he said, I think ambiguity is intrinsic. However, treat it how you will. On one level, it's
a nice...
What
does that mean? Ambiguity.
You can't really tell.
It's an honest question, by the way.
No, I know.
Okay.
Yeah, people are a little too embarrassed now to admit they don't know what words mean. Because I'll read books. And I like to read books. And I'll come across a word. I don't know what it means. I'll just look it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, my wife says a lot of words like that. And I was like, what does that mean?
In America, this was the biggest hit in 1983. It stayed number one for 8 weeks. Longer than Billie Jean. It's the biggest song of the
Look
year.
Look how hard he goes on that last part.
Go ahead.
Every breath you take, every move you make, every bond you break, every step you take, every game you play, every night you stay. Dang,
he's
dude.
He's pissed.
He's so pissed.
He's pissed.
That's the part where it's like.
And he wrote it by himself.
Yeah.
Freaking Gordon Sumner.
That's his real name? Yeah. I had no idea that was his real name.
Yeah.
Gordon Sumner.
Reminds me of Gordon Shumway. You know who Gordon Shumway is?
I don't.
Yeah.
Type in Gordon Shumway and see what comes up.
I love
it. I believe that's Alf. I don't know. Again, I'm okay with asking a question here.
What did Alf stand for, right? It was like
alien life form. Yeah. But Gordon Shumway is?
It's Alf.
It is Alf. Alf's real name is Gordon
What's
Shumway.
What's wrong with you? How did you know that?
That's funny. Sometimes I make myself laugh.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
What up?
That's a good reference.
Mike, we can play a game like that.
An acronym for alien life form. Yeah, man. Freaking Willie Tanner was the dad.
I haven't thought about Alf in a minute.
I haven't either, but freaking Gordon Shumway. That's awesome.
That was great.
Mike likes that. I happen to know Gordon Shumway.
You know so much of that random stuff.
That it checked out.
Yeah, right. And it was so obscure that I was like, you better Google that.
How sure of that were you?
B, solid B.
Okay, good.
Like, I give it an honor roll sureness.
Yeah, but I went straight to Alf.
I wasn't A because it was so long ago and it could have been mixed up over the years. Yeah, Alf was cool because there was the show. I liked Alf, the TV show. Then it had a cartoon that was pretty good. And they developed a late-night talk show for it. And they did it, like, on Nick at Night, but it never really blew up. I think they wanted to go network with it at first.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Alf is done. In the Air Tonight by Phil Collins.
I can feel it coming in the air tonight.
Think about pollution? I mean, now I'm starting to think of it. This is definitely about global warming, isn't it?
People usually think the song is about Phil Collins seeing a man let another man drown. What was the lyric that would make people think that, Mike? Oh, that one. Well, if you told me you were drowning, I would not lend a hand. I've seen your face before, my friend, but I don't know if you know who I am. Here you go.
You were drowning, I would not lend a hand. I've seen your face before, my friend, but I don't know if you know who I am.
So people thought this was about
literal, that, like you,
literally about
like you and Semisonic.
Very simple.
They thought it was about a bar, but no, it's not. It's really a song with no meaning.
I hate that.
The myth that people believe Phil Collins wrote the song after watching a man let someone else drown. It's a big misinterpretation because Phil Collins says it's about nothing. He said the song was written without any specific meaning behind it. He drew inspiration from his recent divorce at the time, but most of the lyrics were improvised. But that didn't stop people from spreading one of the most famous urban legends in music history. The legend goes that Collins wrote the song after watching a man let someone else drown, which was the lyric, well, mm-hmm. If you were drowning, I would not lend a hand. And according to the myth, Collins later found the guilty man at a concert. There's different versions of the story, too. And all of them are nutty.
Well, because when you have a song that means nothing, you can do that, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can just say it's about whatever.
One of the versions has a friend of Phil Collins taking the place of the drowning man. And another has Collins refusing to rescue a drowning man who raped his wife.
Whoa.
They just got more absurd as they go. Don't go, well, it's not true.
Oh.
It is like, oh.
Now that's some fiction story right there.
And he came back and wrote that song, huh? No, it's not true. You're missing the whole point.
Why don't we write a song like this?
Well, that's kind of how
nothing.
That's kind of how we write songs at the beginning. Eddie will play chords, and I'll just start yelling a bunch of words to the melody, and it's nothing.
Yes, improvised.
And then we kind of go back and adjust it to make funny out of it. Yeah. The myth has cemented itself in popular culture and even was referenced in Stan, Eminem Stan.
Oh, yeah.
You might remember these lyrics right here from Eminem Stan. Go ahead.
You know the song by Phil Collins in the Air of the Night about that guy who could have saved that other guy from drowning but didn't? Then Phil saw it all, then at a show he found him? That's kind of how this is. You could have rescued me from drowning. Now it's too late. I'm on 1,000 downers now. I'm drowsy. And all I wanted was a lousy letter of a call.
Why does Eminem say "In the Air of the Night"?
I guess he just
because I was about to say I thought the song was called "In the Air Tonight."
But it's Stan saying it, so it could have been like him just getting it wrong.
I thought I'd got it wrong all these years. I was about to go, "Wow, breakthrough!" I thought it was called "In the Air Tonight."
That's crazy, man.
Yeah, but even Eminem,
even he had it wrong. Well, Stan did.
One of my favorite bands that no longer really is a relevant band is R.E.M.
Oh yeah.
This one goes out to the one I love.
This one goes out to the one I love.
Is this another one of those songs?
Well, most people think it's a love song, yeah. Obviously, because it's this one goes so literal. This goes out to who I love.
Like a request.
Yeah. That's really about using someone over and over again. It was our first hit, by the way. This is the first R.E.M. hit.
Wow.
Yeah.
To occupy my time. This one goes out to the one I love.
Fire! And it's wild that their first hit was in 87.
Because they were 90s.
I wasn't listening to R.E.M.
No.
I was 6 or 7 years old.
But there was that generational gap where, like my brother, he knew R.E.M., and then I liked R.E.M., the later R.E.M.
Yeah, when R.E.M. hit, for me, it was Losing My Religion. It was the big video.
Yeah.
This was their first hit song in 1987. It's not a love song. He describes the song as about how people use people over and over and over again. And until this line here, a simple prop to occupy my time is the lyric that goes, that's what I'm showing.
Yeah. That's the one that sets it straight right there. So what does he say? Fire and then what?
She's coming. She's coming down the mountain when she comes.
Really?
Oh, I've never heard that before. Do you hear it for the first time? Listen, Mike, if you'll pause that for 1 second. So what they yell in the background so faintly is fire. And they go, she's coming down on her own. You'll hear it.
Oh, let me see, Mike.
It's so faint. That's the first time I've ever heard that. Okay, we're going to go back to the beginning of the song.
105.9, 10KLAZ. We're here with a new one from R.E.M.
Rampant.
The year is 1987. You know, I don't know. I don't know where it ends. I don't want to risk missing it.
Wow, I've never heard that part.
So listen closely. Turn it up on the fire, Mike, if you don't mind.
All right, here you go.
Listen first. She's coming down on her own. Check it out.
Fire. Fire.
Wait, it's the same. It's the first one. It's the one we heard earlier. Can you now rewind it?
No, hold on. 1 sec.
Fire.
Do you hear it?
Down.
Coming down. Yeah. Here it is.
We listen to this song. Hundreds, thousands.
Yeah.
Damn. Wow, that's so cool.
It is cool. How about this one? Crash Into Me by Dave Matthews Band.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I think I know what this is about. It's another stalker.
And you should know because you're a big Dave fan.
Huge Dave fan.
And I love Dave too.
Now, I mean, frat girls, sorority girls, frat guys, like this was their song. Like girls loved this song.
And people would think it's about a passionate love affair or a love song. You know, hike up your skirt a little more. Show your world to me. It's really about an ex-boyfriend peeping at a woman from a window.
Yeah, because he does say that in a verse.
You've got your ball. It's hard to sing.
He goes right there, bounce on the bottom.
I'm watching there. Through your window and I stare and you wear nothing.
That's it.
These lines give it away. I watch you there through the window and I stare at you. You wear nothing, but you wear it so well. Wait, what? How creepy, huh? That was written from the point of view from a boyfriend who wants his girlfriend back. I watch you there through the window, basically saying he's watching how beautiful she is. The song is about a voyeuristic man. Many people conceive it as a love song and fail to see the true meaning behind it. On Storytellers, Dave Matthews mentioned that the song was written from a Peeping Tom perspective.
Wow. And no one ever got that before. And if that's not enough, he says, hike up your skirt a little more, show your world to me.
But again, if you're not being literal with it, right? It could mean anything. Like, hike up your a little more, show your world. It could be, like, expose me Bones. To different feelings and thoughts.
The skirt covers one thing.
But the skirt of the world...
Could be a beef skirt, could be a fajita. Yeah. I remember when my brother learned this on guitar, and he was so proud. And he's like, dude, sing it. You know all the words. And we sang it. We had the whole family there. And I was like, hock up your skirt a little more. My dad was like, stop that. Stop that. Next song. Next song.
You so close to me.
He even says, I'm the king of the castle. You're the dirty rascal.
Hey, scroll a little bit more, Mike. Other way. Dave wrote that song by himself.
But what does that mean, crash into me?
He wrote it by himself. These people are making so much money solo writing these songs. By David John Matthews.
Yeah. Crash into me. What's he meaning? Like, let's get our worlds together? Like.
But again, to put our worlds together is also... It can mean anything.
These guys are so artistic.
Slide by the Goo Goo Dolls.
I wanna wake up where you are. I won't say anything at all, so why don't you smile?
I have no clue.
People usually think it's about being in love. It's really about unplanned pregnancy.
Mm.
The song is about dealing with an unplanned pregnancy with lyrics like, I want to wake up where you are, or I'll do anything you ever dreamed to be complete. It's understandable if you overlook that as a song that's about pregnancy.
He says, he does say, I'm going to let it slide. Does that mean like, all right, I'll just let this one slide. We got the baby. We're gonna do this.
Listen to this lyric. Don't you love the life you killed? Meaning like his.
Yes.
Your priest is on the phone. Your father hit the wall. Your mom disowned you. Unplanned pregnancy.
Wow.
Or maybe he's talking about her life. Like she may have killed her own life by being pregnant. Like not literally, like figuratively.
Right.
Like your life's over. Now you gotta raise a kid.
Yeah. The life you knew is done. Mm-hmm.
Johnny Resnick explained it during a Storytellers. Slide is actually about these two Catholic teenage kids and their girlfriend gets pregnant, and they're deciding whether they should get an abortion or get married or just go on. And I don't think a lot of people get that. The singer described it as a not-so-sad tale about some hard choices. What do you think about that?
Pretty deep.
That sounds a little ditty.
We listened to all these songs not thinking about any of this.
American Pie by Don McLean.
I can't remember.
You'll know what this is about.
Yeah, it's the death of the plane crash.
Part of it, right? So you're right. Mostly, it encapsulates that whole era, and that
the 60s
and that plane crash, the 50s.
So doo-wops.
I would think.
Oh, you're right.
I would
think 50s. The 50s. It's 50s. You're right.
And not even the year, but so much, but that era,
mm-hmm.
and what kind of was the exclamation point on the end of it was the plane crash, with Richie Valens, the Big Bopper, Buddy Holly.
Yep.
And it's referenced in the song, but. I mean, jam, right?
Jam.
Singing this will be the day that I die.
And the day that the music died literally is the day that plane crashed with all the music in it. But he said that the lyrics were very ambiguous, again, which means?
I know what it means now.
What?
Like,
ambiguity means?
Yeah, it's... Doesn't make much sense.
You can't tell, really. Like,
right.
You don't know. It could go either way.
Yes.
People ask me if I left the lyrics open to ambiguity. Of course I did. I want to make a whole series of complex statements. He put the song's original manuscript for auction at Christie's.
Look how long this song is.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to guess it's... He wrote it by himself, too.
These guys.
Snotty.
Jeez Louise.
Is this a 6-minute song, Mike?
I think 7.
Is it?
So when there are more people that he's referencing, right? Like when he says the jester.
Again, I think it's just a time and characters.
Right. And I feel like these characters are just different artists.
Oh, I never thought about that they were all specific artists.
Like I think the jester maybe would be Bob Dylan.
You could be onto something. I don't know. Mike, will you Google that? See if the jester and Miss American Pie is Bob Dylan? Because if you're right about that, you're going to be right about other ones too.
Yeah. Jack be nimble, Jack be quick.
Could obviously, be John Lennon.
Yeah, John Jack. Huh.
Don McLean wrote it by himself. Oh, speaking of John Lennon, imagine.
I mean, we all know what this is about, right?
Go ahead.
Imagining what the world would be like without these certain things.
Most people think that it's a song about peace and global unity.
Kind of.
What do you?
Kind of, because he's just kind of saying, like, imagine if we didn't have these people in power doing certain things. Religion, politics, everything else.
It's actually about Wi-Fi.
Dial-up. AOL.
Didn't even exist then.
You got me. That's funny.
It's more so... Because it's a slower tone, people think it's super peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. It's like a song about revolutionary ideas of how to achieve peace, but doing it through radical ways.
Mm.
But he was smart enough to go, well, if I slow it down and treat it as a ballad, people are going to feel like I'm hugging the world more than screaming at the world.
Wow, does he say that?
I mean, that's me. I'm not.
Why did he not say it like that?
I don't know.
Because it's true. And then us, we're all like, duh, it's a slow song. So I like it's peaceful.
The song is actually about the Communist Manifesto.
Wow.
and now I'm reading. Earlier, that was just me musing myself.
That was pretty good.
Most people think that ballads, the ballad Imagine, is about people putting aside their differences, but it's more political. According to Rolling Stone, he once described the song as virtually the Communist Manifesto. And even though I'm not particularly a communist and do not belong to any movement, the song clearly asked the listener to imagine a world without religion or possessions. But Lennon admitted he intentionally tried to sugarcoat his message with the song, the sweetness of the song.
Yeah.
Like sonically, it's like, oh. Imagine is a big hit almost everywhere.
And a beautiful song.
Because it's anti-religious, anti-nationalistic, anti-conventional, anti-capitalistic, and because it's, well, soft and it's like honey. But I'm not the only one.
This video is so good too. And the white piano.
Sarah McLachlan, Angel.
Yeah.
It's about puppies.
Puppies, adoption.
Yeah, adopted. Hi, for $2.99. Hi, it's Sarah. And for the low, low price of $2.99, you can help Sparky. Yeah, I know he only has one eye, but you can help that one eye.
And it always airs at like 3 in the morning when everyone's drunk, like, all right, here's my wallet.
This is for you, Sparky.
Oh, crap, what did I do last night? I adopted 30 dogs.
Wait, what's his receipt for Sparky's new eye? What the?
Yeah, Sarah McLachlan got me again.
The song, most people think, is about angels and losing someone. It's really about heroin addiction.
Whoa.
Yeah, more specifically, the guy from Smashing Pumpkins who died.
Really? Who was that?
The keyboardist.
Oh, wow.
He died in 1986. And I'll read a quote. I went to a cottage north of Montreal to relax and write. I read about the Smashing Pumpkins keyboard player who had OD'd in a hotel room. She wrote this about a song... about the drug addict's struggles with the world. The angel symbolizes the drugs the addict gives into repeatedly. In the arms of an angel, meaning the drugs.
Yes.
She said, the story shook me because although I had never done drugs like that, I felt a flood of empathy for him and the feeling of being lost, lonely, and desperately searching for some kind of release. And that release was drugs, or as some people would have it, their angel.
Wow.
Crazy, right?
People use this one in like funerals, right? Like this is kind of one of those
never
songs.
Been to, sure, maybe because angel is the literal. It's a, they're taking the like their literal interpretation.
Yes,
I've never heard in a funeral, but it would make sense.
Wow, this is, I mean, that changes this. I mean, that song's this song's always been beautiful to me, but it's always been like I don't know what it's about. It's pretty, but wow. I mean, I'm reading it now and like yeah, it's pretty deep.
Spend all your time waiting for that second chance for a break. That would make it okay. There's always some reason to feel not good enough, and it's hard at the end of the day. I need some distraction. Oh, beautiful release. Memories seep from my veins.
There's the hotel room, too.
And maybe empty. Oh, and weightless, and maybe I'll find some peace tonight.
Wow.
Just a different feeling about it. Completely when you know different. She's talking about drug addiction and drugs. From this dark hole. You're right, in the chorus. In the arms of an angel, fly away from here, from this dark, cold hotel room, in the endlessness you fear. Whew.
Wow.
Oh, well, another super sad one. You think that one's going to get you?
Sarah McLachlan wrote that one on her own, too.
Maybe they're just writing one person, but surely. The next one, Don't Cry. Hanson and Bob.
Now, what's this one about?
What do you think it's about?
I have no idea. Tune. Bop. I know there's more in the verses that I don't remember what they say.
Most people think it's just a catchy pop song that really means nothing.
Yeah?
Not true. It's really about how everything we love will be gone before we know it.
What does Bop have to do with that?
They made the word up. And it really isn't just a made up word. 1997. They said Bop represents a frame of mind. And Bop, they're gone. Like, Bop, it's gone. Like, woo, it's gone.
Oh, just like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because bop's a word.
Mm-hmm.
The whole song is about the fact that almost everything in your life will come and go quickly. You got to figure out what matters and grab onto those things. Boy, they don't really love doing that song, though.
No, and that's...
They do. But they don't love it.
I think everyone has respect for that one song that did it for them, but it's I mean, it's got to be hard when that's the one you sing all the time.
Well, they played our Million Dollar Show, and I like those guys. And I know Tyler a bit. Taylor. That's how well I know him. Call him Tyler.
Tyler, Jim, and...
I was thinking about having my phone as, because I didn't want to put him as Taylor Hansen. Right. People would see it.
You so put it's, Tyler
it's
Hansen.
Tyler Hansen. No, it literally is. So, Taylor had come and sat beside me in the seats of the Ryman and was like, hey, man, can we not do Umbop? We'd prefer to do this other song. And
That's a hard question for you.
And it just comes right up to me and asks me. And I respected that he asked me straight up and just didn't get on and not play it. But at the same time, everybody came to see Umbop that was coming to that show.
Is that what you told them?
I was like, man, you can play whatever else you want, but you got to play Umbop. Like, that's it. Again, you don't gotta. I'm not going to make you.
Yeah.
But I can't sit here and say, you know what? Go ahead and do whatever you want. Like, everyone here wants you to play Umbop. So if I'm asking, please play Umbop. And they did.
Yeah.
And everybody freaking jerked their phones out quicker than I've seen almost anybody pull their phones for any artist. So, it's also super kid. So I'm sure they're adults and they have kids. They have probably kids that are close enough to their age.
Right.
So it would be like writing a song when you're 14 and having to sing it when you're 38.
Over and over. Mm-hmm. I remember when they committed and you told me, they're like, oh, they're going to do the show. And I'm like, oh, great. So we might have to learn Umbop. And I looked over the bop, I'm like, I'm never going to memorize that ever.
You have a favorite Hanson song?
That bop. No. I like, there's another one that I really like. It's about a girl. Maybe that
Penny
album.
And Me?
Penny and Me.
Penny and Me is a good one.
Penny and Me was really good. Did they do that on our show?
Maybe.
I think they did.
Yeah, they did.
So good.
Will you pull up the Hanson playlist, Mike? Mm-hmm. Penny and Me is a jam. My favorite is I Will Come to You. Here's Penny. This is your jam.
Yeah.
They're so good.
They are. It's talented.
Yeah. Will you play it from the beginning? Will you play, I will come, maybe I'll come for you. I think it's to you. Is it I Will Come to You?
I Will Come to You.
Yeah. When the night's about... You know this one?
Mm-mm. Is this deep cut? Is this a Hanson deep cut?
I will come. Nope. Not deep. Come on. How about that jam? I will come to you. Oh, I will come to you. Jam. Well, I believe that does it for today's show.
Man, it's funny how you said, like, a lot of these stories came out of, like, storytellers. Mm-hmm. They didn't bring storytellers back with, like, Ariana Grande and be like, Ariana, what is the... When you say... You like my hair, just bought it. What do you mean by that? Like, you know, storytellers was huge to us and we learned so much.
And she'll be like, well, I was in a room with 13 people.
Actually, I wasn't even there.
And we were just throwing out words. First, we made a melody. They gave us the beat and we went, ba 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 doo 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 doo. And then we had to fit words over and those two just happened to fit.
Because I remember learning that, like, Pearl Jam, Eddie Vedder wrote, like, Better Man or something. 15 years before the band even got together.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and we learned that from storytellers.
Well, it's like Counting Crows when they were the Himalayas.
I didn't know that.
Hey, will you look up the... Again, I could mess this up.
Their band?
Up.
Yeah. His band was the Himalayas?
Yeah. Oh, it could have been a different mountain range. It's been a while.
Was it Everest?
Yeah, it's... Let's see.
Blue Ridge.
Because the last thing I want to do is leave something up here that's wrong. But some of those songs were even on that record, the first record. The Counting Crows, Berkeley, California, first name. Now type in Counting Crows, original band.
Oh, Himalayas. There it is.
The Himalayas. Round Here was the Himalayas song. Round Here.
No way.
Yeah.
The Himalayas were an
American rock band between 90 and 91. They're best known for starting their careers.
That's the bass.
This is the Himalayas doing Round Here.
Wow, that's a different sound for sure.
Yeah. So, again, they had written that song and cut it on their
record. We can do a whole Bobby cast on this.
On the
on bands that were before the band.
No, just the Counting Crows.
Just Counting Crows. We just break down all of that Storyteller's live CD.
Yeah. Hey. You know what would be fun? I mean, at this point, because Adam Duritz used to be really famous. At this point, I could probably get on pretty easily.
Yeah.
This is it?
Yeah.
About the front door like a ghost into the fog.
A little faster.
So the melody's the same.
Which is never the same, but
kind of darker.
Also,
I walk in the air between
the rain through myself and back again. Less whiny.
I don't know. Oh, wow. Good call. Yeah. Maria
says she's dying. It's a different kind of bass.
Yes. That's just the bass line.
It almost sounds like Limp Bizkit. Like a Limp Bizkit bass line.
This wouldn't have made it.
I mean, heavy electric.
You're right. It does sound like a different band completely. Like one of those.
Like Korn, Limp Bizkit, that era. That, yeah. All right.
You taught me that one. I didn't know that. Himalayas. No clue.
I wasn't sure I knew it. So stuff just sits back here sometimes, and I'll just go, oh, like my initial reaction is to yell it out. Yeah. And it matches a lot of times.
Like Gordon?
Like freaking Gordon Shumway.
Gordon Shumway. Mike, look that up. That's Alf, right?
By the way, big shout out to Mike D, who produced this entire episode, all the clips and tons of research. So thanks to him. Ed, is your family here?
No, I have no idea. My phone's over there.
But it's raining, so they can't be at the pool.
I'll check right now.
They're probably down watching TV.
Probably.
Eating the snacks.
Yeah.
I started watching the show called The Boys on Amazon. It's a superhero show, but it's like real life, meaning as real life as you can be. It's like these people are superheroes, but it's like they're real problems.
Okay.
They have a real, like addiction.
Oh, wow.
Sex stuff.
Oh, and they live on Earth?
Yeah.
Wow, that sounds good.
It's really good. You're watching it too.
Yeah, I like
one season.
Yeah, it's 8 episodes. And if you have this is not a commercial, by the way.
No, I have Amazon.
If you have Amazon Prime and you order stuff, you get all the shows too.
Yep.
Which I didn't know for a long time.
Yes.
I thought I had to buy a separate subscription. Like, no way.
Yes.
But yeah.
And it also comes with a lot of other stuff that you didn't know you had, like TV stuff, like golf tournaments. They're all on there for free.
For my gambling?
No. If you like golf, if you like basketball games that you normally wouldn't find, they're on there.
I'm gonna go play racquetball with Amy's husband. The big debate was, will I win?
Yes.
You say yes?
I think you will.
He says he's good.
He's a bigger guy, and I feel like he's stronger than you, but racquetball's about.
But he's a bigger guy and not fat. He's
No.
He's pretty in shape, though. He flew us this week, and he had a tucked-in shirt.
He did. He looks good.
Yeah.
He looks good, but he doesn't ride like you do the Peloton bike.
Yeah, like my cardio, but it's more than just running.
Yeah, but it's fast. That's mostly what racquetball is, back and forth.
How do you know? You got to be able to hit it, though. You mean mostly? Eddie's giving me his prognostication on racquetball.
I feel like I could give you a good run at racquetball.
There is no way.
Like, not like...
Unless you've played those... And it's not even my athletic prowess. It's playing the angles off the walls all the time.
Right.
You got to start...
Hey, I know, man.
Okay.
I know how to play the game.
Cool.
I got 10 bucks on Bobby.
Oh, 10? See, that's it.
But would you do 10 bucks at 4-1 odds?
Yes.
Meaning you would win $10, but you would lose 40.
I would.
Correct.
Yep.
But if you bet on me, you can win a lot more than that.
But you would lose 10, one but you can win 40.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate that.
Check out The Sore Losers. That's Eddie, Lunchbox, and Raymundo's podcast. Check out Amy's podcast, Four Things with Amy Brown. Check out The Velvet's Edge with Kelly Henderson. It's a lifestyle podcast about fashion and just, being a female and living your best mid-20s to mid-30s life. Also, check out Caroline Hobby's podcast called Get Real, where she talks with a lot of the wives of country music superstars and just really strong women in the business. By the way, I don't know if it's up yet, but Chris Daughtry's wife. So she had a girlfriend while her and Chris were together, open.
Oh, really?
They're married, and she had a real-life open relationship
she
girlfriend.
She talks about this on the podcast?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Wow.
Is it up yet?
It'll be up tomorrow.
Oh, so by the time you hear this, it'll probably be up. Check out Real with Caroline Hobby. And is that it, Mike D?
That is it.
About to bring on another podcast. I'll tell you who it is off the air, but it's going to be really funny.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you were saying you had a meeting with someone.
We did. It was him and his two managers.
Oh, cool.
Two managers.
Very cool. All right.
I know. All right, thank you guys, and we'll see you next time here on... Anything you want to say?
No, man. Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Who's your favorite band of all the bands? Who's your favorite band that morphed into Counting Crows?
The Himalayas.
It's the only one. That's right. You learned something.
And, like, am I missing anyone?
And what is the term for...
Ambiguity.
You really can't tell. It could be either.
Ambiguity.
Well, that's so ambiguous. Oh. If something's ambiguous.
Yes.
But a form of that would be...
Ambiguity.
It's ambiguity.
Ambiguity.
Ambiguity. All right. Yeah,
and what is Alf Rule's name?
Gordon Lightfoot.
No, Gordon Shumway. Gordon Shumway. That's an artist. Right. All right, bye, everybody.